I'll open the floor for questions. Whoever wants to ask questions first.
If I could ask the Rosh Yeshiva, in the past, I remember growing up as a non-frum kid in Dallas, Texas, and yeshivas, Nei Yisrael, and others would send their talmidim, the Yugalite, out to the sticks to do kiruv, play kodesh, even if they were going to go into business for 2 years, 3 years, but everyone had to go out and do something for Klal Yisrael. The last 10 years, roughly, we've seen a shift. Those of us that are trying to hire Yungalites to come, whether it's for Kailalim, whether it's for Kiruv, whether it's to be Rabbeim in the yeshivas and the day schools, it is next to impossible to find quality people, or even not so quality people, that are willing to leave the metropolises to come out to cities like St. Louis, Columbus, Ohio, Cincinnati, and so on. And has there been a shift in the hashkafa of what the yeshivas are, I guess, encouraging the Yungalite to do after they finish their years in Kollel? Or is there something else going on sociologically that has caused this shift in the difficulty to find quality people to come help us make a difference in out-of-town communities?
I agree that there has been a shift. I remember when I was a bocher, everyone had an ambition to go out to some small town to build up Yiddishkeit, to make a yeshiva. That was like the ambition of every yeshiva bocher. And that was the basis of many kodolim that were founded in Dallas and Atlanta and different places, where these people that wanted to go out to be mashpia. And there's been a shift. People feel more comfortable and don't feel obligated for some reason to the rest of Klal Yisrael. I think an exception is that Neri Soil. I think Neri Soil has sent out people. We just sent a group of Kollel people to Atlanta, and what else did we send? I think to... Well, we sent to another place recently also. So a group of Bochum, maybe Cincinnati, I remember. So... But it's not enough, you're right, it's not enough. People are very comfortable, and they just feel comfortable where they are, and they don't feel like going out, that's all. It could be because the cities became very strong, the schools became of a high level, and there's yeshiva in the city, they themselves have chavrusas and can grow. So they think that they can raise a better family in the big cities than to go to the small cities. That's why they don't want to go anymore. It's more comfortable, that's all. But you're right, it's wrong. And certainly there should be a yisurus to go out. No, Seattle, for instance, falling apart because there's no one to go out there to learn there in the Kollel. The whole city's falling apart. The staff is leaving. Maybe they haven't left already. And that means the whole city's going to fall apart. So I agree with you that this is something that has to be changed. It has to be changed from the top. We have to talk about it more. We have to inspire people to go out and to be mashpia. It has to be a goal of every yeshiva bocher to go out and to be mashpia after he spends a couple of years in the kollel. I agree with you. It's so unfortunate that you're right. I can't argue with you. You're right. You're very perspective. There is a difference, right?
Just struggling.
Yeah, no, I used the wrong word, not perspective. You're very, what's the word? Perceptive. Yeah. Yeah.
I have a question about
that. Yeah.
So could be, this is naive, or that's what I want to do up here, that's there on the child. So I'm just coming from China. We know that the Chayavadim lowered his safer, even though he said he was always going to the Yerid. So I would imagine...
You know what?
He was always going to the Yerid.
Yeah, he was a businessman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, my shkafa Rishayna would be that even someone in the working world should try to become a Talmid Chacham, even in Ian. Sometimes, like, a lot of young people or Bachram think that, you know, someone makes money, he should, you know, he has enough money, he should go back to learn. But we don't find that the Gedolim have typically told people to do so. There's a famous story with the Chofetz Chaim who told someone that it was his job to keep being a parent of the tzibur. So I'm wondering if I'm wrong, or maybe people who should who go to work should still try to be a Ian Kamkov.
Yes. I don't know if you ever read or heard about Rabbi Zev Kohn's Vadim in Chicago. He has Vadim for working people, where they get together once a week and all together work on different things. For example, he makes them work on Brochas B'Kavonet. Everyone has to make an Asher Yotzeh B'Kavonet. They're in the office, doesn't matter. Wherever you are, you have to make an Asher Yotzeh B'Kavonet. Davening Mincha has to be B'Kavonet. They work together to make sure that they keep on growing even though they're working, they have a job. It's very important. It's not. They say that the Chassam Sofer gave a tzavua bal peh to his Talmidim that they should be kaveitim l'tera their whole lifetimes. So the Talmidim were very insulted. When you were sitting and learning 18 hours a day and you give us a bracha that we should be kaveitim l'tera an hour in the morning, an hour at night, all of our lifetimes, what kind of bracha is that? So he told him, when a person sits and learns the whole day in yeshiva and he goes out to work, he stops learning completely. So you have to remember that even when you go to work, you have to keep on stagging, you have to keep on growing. Whatever time you have, and you can make time, you can make more time than you think is possible. And you have to grow. You have to grow in midas and in musar, your Hashemayim and your davening and your Iker is in your Talmud Torah. Can you become a big Talmud Chacham while you're working? Yes. I remember seeing a sefer by a guy who worked in Eretz Yisrael, who was a full-time employee for the electric company in Israel, and he wrote a sefer, which was a Nifladika sefer, on Zroim. He learned Zroim during his spare time. I mean, his learning was his main thing, and his work was in his spare time. But he wrote a beautiful sefer. You can do it if a person is dedicated and makes melachta cho'aroi v'teros v'keva, a person can grow and become a bigger Talmud Chacham even if he's working. And so, naturally, the more hours you put into learning, the quicker the process will be. But you can also grow. You should not give up from your dreams of being a Talmud Chacham just because you have to make a living. It shouldn't be that way. You just have to keep yourself in stride. I had a friend. We learned together in yeshiva. And he never thought he would be a Magid Shir because he stuttered. He never could be a Rov or a Magid Shir. So he took a job with the Social Security. Social Security, after 20 years, you can retire. So he started, he got married, he's about 25. He's about 45, he retired. And he came to visit me in Eretz Yisrael. So I started asking him how are things, I hadn't seen him for 20 years, how are things, everything. He says he doesn't want to talk about anything, he just wants to talk and learning. For 20 years, he got up before davening to learn, an hour and a half or two before davening. And when he came, finished work at the Social Security, he didn't go home. He took a sandwich and he went to the base medrash and learned with some of the chavrusa until about 9 o'clock at night and he went home. His wife supported him for this and he did this for 20 years and I was astounded. He was a boki b'shas. Yeah? I was sitting and learning all these years in yeshiva. And he was a balabas working with Social Security and I would say that he knew more than I did. So he was consistent, he learned every day and he chazered. And he was serious about it. As melachta v'avoy, you didn't want to waste any time. You're able to do it. That's all. So it's not good to give up on becoming a Talmud Chacham just because you're working. That's all. You have to keep on growing your whole lifetime. So that's called melachta v'avoy teros v'keva. Your melacha has to be avoy and your tev has to be keva. Okay. Yeah.
For those of us involved in faith, whether the more modern or the more yeshiva, so I think there's a general struggle with tefillah, with let's call it middle school now. And along the lines of the challenge of a world of comfort, a two-part question, what's an akuda we can focus on for a generation that does not lack? And what's the Rav's approach in terms of incentives?
Talking about tefillah, about davening? Kids this age, is very hard to get them to concentrate on davening. It's not easy. But the first step is, in davening, is that they have to know the meanings of the tefillah. So the school has to set apart time for them to learn the meanings of davening and to bang it into their heads. They have to review it so that they know what they're saying. It's very hard to concentrate when you don't know what you mean, what you don't understand what you're saying. So, but definitely there, you have to concentrate on tefillah. You have to emphasize tefillah. It's an important part of a person's is one third of a person's life, a person's world. So, I say the first step is to teach Perush HaTfilas. The second step is that the teacher should be a good example for the students, and he himself should daven b'kavona. That's important also. A teacher is supervising students. I once heard Rav Hutner said that a father comes into shul and his son is sitting next to him. His son is not paying attention. He tells him, keep his finger. So the kid learns from that when you're in the middle of davening, you're supposed to say, the supervisor, it shouldn't be davening. I think he should daven separately before if he wants to supervise them. And you can't supervise and daven at the same time. He has to be a good model for them. Okay. That's so far I agree with everything everyone asks.
Second part in terms of the lo lishma, the incentivizing students. Is there something to be said about that?
About tefillin?
To incentivize it. Not bribe.
Yeah. How to get them incentive to daven b'tefillin? I think if someone understands tefillah and understands the structure of tefillah, I think he'll enjoy tefillah. The problem is it looks like a jumble of words and a jumble of ideas. There's ways to organize all the brachas into certain groups and to show that they have a pattern and that they're all specifically asking for particular things. I think if you show them the pattern and the meanings, I think they'll enjoy davening. I think for grown-ups also the same thing. Did any of you see my book in English? Did you see Shane? There have a discussion about tefillah also. Yeah. Okay.
Until what age is that practical? At a certain point, the school's going to say to the, you know, let's say a school hasn't focused too much on Pirush HaMilah since kindergarten. So you have boys in fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade. If you're just going to be focusing on Pirush HaMilah, so that means they're not davening.
There's a school that told me, a guy in South Bend told me what he does, or what he did when he's principal, is that every year they concentrated on one or two brachas. From the second grade to third grade. And by the time they were in eighth grade, they knew the meanings of all the brachas. That's a good idea.
Are they also davening the rest of the
school? Yeah, they daven the rest, but they concentrated on the meanings of one or two brachas every year. And by the time they finished, they knew all the brachas. Yeah. Yeah.
So given the age, given the kofos and nefesh, and given the kofos the seichel of this official base rabbi, what does the Rosh Yeshiva feel is the most important akuda in terms of their age and what they can tend to focus on in our door? What should we try to inculcate more than anything else?
I think there's an overall message that we should give to children in schools, all schools. They have an overall message, and I don't think it's being transmitted. And that is that the Jewish people has a way of life which is unequaled by anyone else. There's a difference between a Jew and a Goy. You have to get that message across, because we live in a society, we speak English, and we're part of their outside culture. And kids have idols, Goyisha idols, baseball players, movie stars. So we have to get across the message that we're not going. that we are Jews and not goyim. I think that's important. It's an important message to get across. But you can't do it frontally, because kids will resist it. They have their heroes. But you have to get the message across that we are different, we are better, we're nobler. You have to get across what our gedolim think about, the stories about the Chofetz Chaim, what type of people we have as our gedolim, and the selfish, and the self-serving goals of the politicians and the presidents. We have to get across to them that they're goyim. They have different goals in mind, and we have different goals. Our goyim have different goals in mind. I think that's a message which every principal should somehow get across in every one of his public addresses to the student body. Should somehow get along this message. There's a difference between a Jew and a goy. That's what I think. And we're a nobler nation. We have different values that no other nation in the world equals. That's all. Nobody equals the values of our nation. No one, other nation lives with a value of kindness and caring about others and being an ono. No one cares about that. Everyone looks for taiva and for kovod and kikine. They're just the direct opposite of what we live for. You have to get along in a subtle way, and I think it's important to do that. There's a teacher once came, a principal, asked me once, what do I do about the kids that they have all these football stars and baseball stars, they adulate them and they follow them. What am I supposed to do about this? I told him, take a look in the newspapers and you'll find different items every week or nearly every day about something that a football star did. This one kicked his wife in the belly while she was pregnant, and the other one was caught with drugs, and the third one was caught drunk and driving. Just snip it out of the newspaper and paste it on the bulletin board. That's all. That's all. He told me later it worked like a charm. Okay? Okay? That's a subtle way of getting across the message, okay? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And somebody asked about Rosh Hashiva during this tikkun that we're going through with the unmasking of Sinas Yisrael.
Yeah.
It's always been there, but it's become more and more apparent.
Yeah.
So during this tikkun, for those of us who are still in the Pusarites, you know, how do we know, or is it an individual decision when, gosh, this is Hashem is sending us a message that it's time to move on. The United States has been wonderful. Hashem has given us a wonderful gift for all these years for Klal Yisrael to be in the United States, but now it's time to move back to Eretz Yisrael, and are we at that point?
I'll tell you, I want to say one thing about that. It could be that we are living in a tkufa, rising anti-Semitism. There's someone who has a podcast, just 35 million viewers, where he openly spews vile anti-Semitism. It's very, very frightening what's happening. But you have to also remember that about a month ago, there was a man in Iran that was 4 weeks away from atom bomb, who had all the equipment and all the missiles to throw an atom bomb on Israel. So Israel's not the safest place on earth. That's also anti-Semitism. To have a guy in Iran throwing an atom bomb at you is also a form of anti-Semitism, right? So you're not going to escape by going to Israel. That's the point. Besides that, Israel needs America. If not for the voters of America, Trump would have never bombed the atomic places where they're developing an atomic bomb in Iran. So we need American voters also. You can't just empty out American voters and go to Israel. You can't do that either. It's not so pushy. An individual can make such a decision to go to Israel, but as en masse, to make everyone should go, I think it's foolhardy. Everyone should pick up and go to Eretz Yisrael is foolhardy, because Eretz Yisrael is a very dangerous place. But what do we do about anti-Semitism? This is a product of what I said before. Rabbi Chaim Wasserman says anti-Semitism comes about when Jews begin acting like goyim. That is the problem of our society. We're all like goyim. and dress like goyim, we talk like goyim, we think like goyim. We have to stop being goyim. We have to stop. We have to, a way to combat anti-Semitism, maybe we should all start talking Yiddish. That might be a way. Yeah. We have to make a separation between, you know what they say, what's that expression? When the Jew doesn't make, what's that? A Jew doesn't make Havdalah? If God doesn't make Kiddush, the Goyim makes Havdalah. Yeah. So, as Rav Chaim Wasserman said, anti-Semitism comes when Jews start acting like Goyim. Right? So, we have to, I think we have to reinforce our separation from Jews and Goyim in our society. I think that's the cure for anti-Semitism. I think that's the problem. That's the source of the problem. Hashem Yirachem Taki, it's a very serious situation here. We don't know what could happen. There are 28 members of Congress in the Democratic Party that are openly anti-Semitic. 28. And now we have a respite because Trump is in office, but he's just there for another year and a half. He can't be reelected, so what's going to happen afterwards? Who knows? Hashem Yirachem. But anyhow, we have to go to the source of the problem. The source of the problem is us, is we, not the anti-Semitism. That's not the source of the problem. And I don't know if going to Israel en masse is a wise thing to advocate. And individually, people can go if they have a way to go. Also, another thing, everyone goes together, Eretz Yisrael. I don't know if Eretz Yisrael could accommodate them, a frum community. How many communities do you have frum that could accommodate them, that could absorb them? It won't work. So, in the meantime, hold tight, I would say, and be misspell. Yeah. Okay? Anything else?
How should one balance someone has an option to maybe work more and support communal institutions versus working less and pursuing their own learning? How should one draw that line and balance those two conflicting demands on his time?
It's a very, very difficult question. I remember when I was in B'nai Brak, there was a Jew that used to support yeshivas, and he decided he's getting old, he wants to give up his store, and he wants to sit and learn all day. And the Chazon Ish told him not to. He said that he says people in the army, everyone has his position. There's artillerymen, there's foot soldiers, there's the Air Force. He says, your job is to support Torah. And you have to keep on supporting Torah. That's what he told him. That's what this man told a friend of mine, his son. So, if your contribution to supporting Torah is not very significant. You're donating money, but it's not significant. You're not a very wealthy person that supports institutions. I would say you're not mechuyev to give up your... You could give up your job and go to work and go to learn. I think so. If you're a major contributor, major supporter of Torah, I think you should not give up your job. That's it. And you should continue supporting the Torah. If it'll make a big difference, giving up your income or lowering your income, then you should not lower it if you're supporting to it. But if you are just earning enough money, you're donating money, you're giving miser, you're donating money, then you can give up your job and sit and learn more hours for the day. Yeah, that's what you should do. Thanks.
Thank you, Rosh Hashanah, for giving a bracha to them.
They should have a bracha. You're all bnei aliyah. He's here from your questions that you all want to grow, and you're all looking to grow. And it's a community. It's an unbelievable community. It has wonderful rabbanim, wonderful infrastructure, schools, and kollelim also. It's a light for the American Jewish community, St. Louis. It's always been a very important community, but even now more so. And you should continue your personal growth and your hashpoah